Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session today, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I'll turn the call over to Karen Hunter. You may begin.
Thank you, and welcome to today's Vital Signs press briefing. The Vital Signs report is titled Current Cigarette Smoking Among Adults Age 18 and Older, United States 2005 through 2010. And we're going to begin with CDC Director Dr. Thomas Frieden. Dr. Frieden?
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Also, let me apologize for the quality of the connection here. I'm in a very noisy area related to the rain and travel delays. Today's information is for the tobacco remains the leading preventable cause of death in the United States. For 40 years, there was a consistent decline in the number of adults who smoked from 1964 to around 2005. Over the past 5 years, we've seen a virtual stall in the decline in smoking, but today's report shows that that decline did actually continue. So we have good news, which is that there are fewer Americans smoking today than in the past, that the proportion of Americans who smoke decreased slightly from 20.9% to 19.3%. That represents 3 million fewer smokers in 2010 than there would have been if prevalence had not declined since 2005. And 3 million fewer smokers is a very significant finding. About half of all smokers will be killed by tobacco if they don't quit. And about a third of all current smokers may die from cigarette use unless they quit promptly. So we're talking about preventing more than a million deaths because of that decline. On the other hand, that decline was very gradual. It was much slower in terms of the rate of decline than previous declines. So we can certainly do much better. There were several other trends that were noteworthy. The number of people who smoke very heavily, a pack and a half or more per day, fell quite substantially, and the number of people who smoke less than half a pack a day increased as a proportion of the number of total smokers. Now, while that is a reflection of fewer cigarettes being smoked, the fact is that the only safe thing to do is to quit smoking entirely. This has a lot of implications for smokers and for the healthcare system. Quitting smoking is the most important thing that a smoker can do to live a longer, healthier life. Smokers not only die much younger than non-smokers, but for the years that they're alive, they feel much older. What we've seen also in different parts of the U.S. is that the states that have continued to implement effective tobacco control interventions have seen much more sustained and rapid declines in the number of adults and youth who smoke. So tobacco control works. It's not a question of our tools getting blunter. It's a question of our failing to effectively implement tobacco control measures. The study that is being reported on today is reported from a very systematic evaluation of how many people smoke and is controlled for a number of potential confounders. So we view this as the most valid information we have. This was a household interview survey. One of the challenges that we've had in recent years in accurately describing the proportion of adults who smoke is a dramatic increase in the number of individuals who only have a cell phone and don't have landline coverage. And we know from various studies that those who only have a cell phone have a slightly higher smoking rate than those who don't, who also have a landline or who only have a landline. And therefore, this study, which is actually a door-to-door study, gives what we believe is the most valid information about smoking. So we have fewer Americans smoking, and smokers who are smoking less. If you smoke, there is a lot of hope. Most Americans who ever smoked have already quit, and most people who continue to smoke can quit either on their own or with assistance. There are a few tips that help smokers to quit. They can think about the reason for quitting, the health benefits they'll get, the people they'll be able to live to see their graduations, how much better they'll feel with exercise, aesthetic and other benefits. A second is to get support from family and friends, to quit with a buddy. A third is to identify and reduce the things that trigger smoking, whether it's familiar smoking places or a situation, and for people who want to quit, to avoid those triggers, to set a clear quit date, and to prepare for quitting by cleaning the house and getting rid of the triggers like ashtrays. Most people who have ever smoked in this country have already quit, and most smokers want to quit. So we think that today's information shows continued progress in reducing smoking in the U.S., but slower progress than we would like, slower progress than is possible, and slower progress than most smokers want. I'm going to stop there and ask Dr. McAfee if there are other things that he would like to add, and then after that, we'll open it up for questions.
And this is the moderator. I forgot to introduce Dr. McAfee. It's Tim McAfee. He's the director of CDC's Office on Smoking and Health. His last name is spelled M-C-A-F-E-E. Dr. McAfee, did you have any remarks, or would you like to go to the questions?
Just add a couple things to what Dr. Frieden had gone over. One is that particularly in these economic times, it's also important to remember that in addition to the terrible cost of human life, there's also a significant financial burden that smoking places on all of us, and that smoking costs the U.S. about $193 billion annually, which is about equally comprised of direct medical costs and lost productivity. And in terms of this issue of us as a society really having the tools at hand to be able to solve and really ultimately drive down the pain and suffering and economic costs that smoking causes to us, one of the areas that needs more attention particularly is the importance of sustaining our comprehensive state tobacco control programs, which have had so much success over the past two decades. The tobacco industry continues to spend almost $10 billion each year, $27 million every day on cigarette advertising and promotion, with about 72% of that now spent on discounting to offset the price increases that were brought about by the higher excise taxes. But this year alone, out of the $25-plus billion in tobacco-generated state revenues that come from the sale of tobacco products, currently only about 2% or less is being dedicated to state programs to reduce tobacco use. And if states were to dedicate more like the 10 to 15% that is recommended of these tobacco revenues to tobacco control, they'd be fully funding these programs, and we would see a much more rapid decline in tobacco use in our society.
Thank you, Dr. McAfee. And I think we can open it up for questions now.
Thank you. We would now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Thank you. Our first question comes from Timothy Martin with Wall Street Journal. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning. Could you guys talk about smokers are smoking less? Could you dive into maybe the reasons why the proportion of smokers who are taking in nine or fewer cigarettes per day on the decline, 30 or more falling? Is there a reason for that?
And this is Tim McAfee. Dr. Frieden, you want me to take that? I'll take that. I think we've seen a steady decline in consumption over the last 40 years, 45 years since the first Surgeon General's report back in the mid-60s. And so there are two things that the ways that happen. One is that some people quit, and then the other is that people cut down. And so I think people are doing this because of the changes that have happened in society. We've seen a denormalization of smoking. We've seen the increase in clean indoor air laws that have happened so aggressively in the last 10 years. So people, it's a little harder for people to smoke, but it's also people feel like they want to cut down. We've seen the increases in cigarette tax that went up on average. Both there was a federal increase a couple of years ago, and then the states, most of the states have actually increased their taxes over the last decade, so that people, which drives down consumption even more than it drives down people quitting. I think the thing that we wanted to emphasize about this trend is, to the extent to which people are cutting back for health benefits, not for pure economic benefits, we just want to be sure that people understand that probably more so now than we thought 10 years ago, we are considerably less impressed with the benefit that people will accrue to themselves by cutting down as a harm reduction strategy. The far and away the best thing that people can do is to quit, for which they will get very clear, some of them almost immediate benefits, and where we have a much more definite sense of the dramatic benefit that they'll get.
Yeah, and one follow-up. Thank you.
This is Dr. Frieden. I'll just add to that we really do know what works in tobacco control. A comprehensive tobacco control program is highly effective at reducing smoking rates. And the key components of that are smoke-free, so that people don't have to breathe cigarette smoke at their work or in other public places. Offering help to people who want to quit. We know that evidence-based tobacco cessation measures can double or triple the chances that someone who wants to quit will quit. Warning about the harms of tobacco through media coverage and through effective mass media. Reducing the efforts of industry to mislead the public about smoking, something which they have been doing for decades, and raising taxes, which is the single most effective way to reduce tobacco use. In parts of the country where those policies have continued to be or been progressively implemented, we see rates of tobacco use that are far below the national average, and that would be possible anywhere. And in contrast, in parts of the country where those measures are not being implemented, we see rates of tobacco use that are significantly higher than the national average. There is a misperception or misconception among some that we have reached an irreducible minimum of smoking, and that this is just kind of, we're going to be at 20% or 18%. That is very far from the truth. We know that it's possible in different parts of this country and around the world to drive down tobacco use rates substantially more than they've been driven down already, and that most smokers want that to happen.
Yeah, and one quick follow-up. Thank you for your answers. You had mentioned, I think Dr. Frieden had mentioned that the rate of reduction of smoking had stagnated after about 40 years of consistent declines, and maybe in the last 5 years or so, it's declined again. Anything policy-wise, maybe this is retread from the previous question and answer, but anything policy-wise or anything different in recent years that might account for the 1.5% drop from 2005 to 2010?
I'll begin and ask Dr. McAfee to continue. There are a couple of things that we've seen. One is the unfortunate substantial decline in state-level funding for tobacco control. And Dr. McAfee can give you some of the numbers on that, but we've seen a decrease in investment in tobacco control, and therefore we're having more tobacco-related disease as a result. Second, and something that we are not yet fully able to analyze or understand, may have been changes in tobacco products. The laboratory at the Centers for Disease Control, which analyzes the tobacco industry and cigarettes, has found that the industry has been able to often change the way nicotine, or affects, I should say, the way nicotine is inhaled and absorbed. And so it is possible that the cigarette today may be somewhat even more addictive than they were 10 or 20 years ago. We've seen an increase in what is called free nicotine, or essentially cracked nicotine, available for very rapid absorption through the lungs on smoking. But I'll ask Dr. McAfee to expand on those ideas.
Yeah, the only thing I would add, to flip it around, actually one thing I wanted to clarify, I don't think we would use the word stagnate to describe the last 5 years. In many ways, the findings that we're releasing today are good news relative to what we were concerned might have happened over the last 5 years, because the thing that's different about the last 5 years from the previous 5 years is that the rate of decline is slower and it's been less stable. There was a couple of periods between 2006 and 2007 where it didn't go down at all, whereas in other years it was solid each year. But so stagnation, fortunately, is an overstatement. It's a slowing down on the rate of decline, but we are still moving in the right direction. I would just add, I think, to answer the part of your question that was asking about positive things that have helped to make this happen. First of all, it's the price increases that have happened both in the states and at the federal level that resulted from the tax increases. We do think that this we got perhaps less of an impact from this than we would have expected, in large measure because of the strategies that the tobacco industry has used, where they've shifted a lot of their promotional efforts into discounting at the point of sale in the retail environment, as well as through their couponing campaign that they do direct to consumers, and that these have been executed to the point that they have diminished the effects we would have gotten otherwise. We also think that we've seen this incredible positive epidemic spread of clean indoor air ordinances, both at the state level, where we went in 2000 from zero states having comprehensive clean indoor air laws to half of the states having comprehensive clean indoor laws, plus a whole host of local communities that also moved forward on this. So we think that made a big difference. There was actually some move in the private sector, where over the last 5 years, we had three out of six of the major Hollywood studios essentially self-imposed standards relating to PG-13 movies not depicting smoking, which had been a major issue earlier in the decade, and we think that may have also contributed, particularly towards decreasing youth initiation.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. And this question comes from Julie Steinheisen with Reuters. You may ask your question.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you can quantify for me the rate of how the rate of smoking decline has slowed, and I don't know if you can do that or not.
I'm not sure we can do it immediately off the tip of our tongues, but we could certainly get back to you with a more quantitative mathematical description of it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Next question comes from Deborah Kotz with Boston Globe. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my phone call. I'm just curious if when you had mentioned before about the states, that you said that that the states are sort of not using a large percentage of the profits that they make from tobacco towards tobacco reduction strategies. You wanted to get that 10 to 15% that's recommended. Are any states reaching that benchmark? And if so, have you seen a parallel decline in the smoking rates that are greater than the national average over the last few years?
It's both an issue of how much states are spending, but it's also an issue of how they're spending it and the continuity of spending it. And the classic example of this is actually California, which began the nation's longest-running tobacco control all the way back in 1988. And it is continuously Its funding level is still lower than we would recommend, but they have just been sort of like the little engine that could, in that they've kept doing this year after year after year, and evolved to their situation so that the adult smoking rate in California has actually dropped 50% from when they started, with the number of cigarettes smoked decreasing 2/3. And in its they've now analyzed, done some of the first analyses of really the cost-benefit of this, and found that for a little less than $2 billion that they invested over this period of time, they've saved $86 billion in healthcare costs. And there are similar examples from other states. Arizona, which was one of the earliest programs, spent about $250 million between 1996 and 2004, and saw a savings of $2.3 billion in healthcare costs. So we are beginning to get now, particularly as we're getting into an era where we're starting to see lung cancer rates begin to decline, particularly dramatically in states that have had these kind of longstanding programs. We're starting to see the benefits that they are accruing, and that both these expenditures of resources, as well as the policies relating to clean indoor air and price, are bearing fruit.
Do you happen to have any specific stats like that on Massachusetts?
We can definitely get those to you. Would you like us to follow up?
Yes, definitely.
We'll do. Bill Nody, we'll get back to you with specifics on Massachusetts.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robert McPherson with AFP. You may ask your question.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you doing? A couple of questions. First of all, I guess to follow up on my colleague from Boston, but what is, have you got a bit of a regional picture? Are there places in the country that is more likely to be smoking, and parts of the country where they're less likely? And also a socioeconomic indicator, are sort of may higher income families more likely to quit, lower incomes more likely to keep on smoking? And yeah, that's my first question. I'll have a quick follow up as well.
Well, this is Tim McAfee. I'll take a first stab at that. Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you asked this question, because that was another one of the findings in our this study. Unfortunately, many of the disparities in smoking levels and thus morbidity and mortality are continuing. Everybody has been going down, but In 2010, the prevalence of current cigarette smoking is higher among men, about 21.5%, than women, which is about 17.3%. It's higher in adults from 25 to 64, and there's a dramatic disparity between the highest racial ethnic group was American Indians and Alaska Natives, which were at 31.4%. And that goes down with non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic blacks being almost identical, 21% for whites and 20.6 for blacks. Hispanics are about 12.5%, and non-Hispanic Asians are at 9.2%. So there's more than a threefold difference between Asians and American Indian Alaska Natives. And similarly, for education level, we see a dramatic difference between those with a high level of education, with those with a postgraduate degree just at 6%, those with an undergraduate degree at about 10%, whereas people that have a GED have a rate of smoking of 45%. Mm. This is also true with income, with people above the poverty level, at or above it at about 18%, and people below it at almost 29%. Now, the other thing you asked about geography, there's also there is geographic variation, with smoking being the highest in the Midwest at almost 22%, and the South at 21%, and lowest at the West at about 16%. And if you look at individual states, the two states that are the lowest, which are both in the West, are Utah at 9.1% and California at 12.1%. and it's the highest in West Virginia at about 26.8% and Kentucky at 24.8%.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Next question, please.
Okay, I would just add one other thing that we mm-hmm. think that there is a relationship, as Dr. Frieden mentioned, between the aggressiveness with which the states have pursued both policies and funding of tobacco control programs and the rate of smoking in their state.
Right. Okay. Thanks. And it's a quick follow-up on that note also. Did I understand correctly you're seeing that those public campaigns and a personal concern for one's health seems to be the motivating factor, and not the fact that we're in economic hard times now and maybe people are giving up smoking or making the effort to give up smoking because it's simply become too much of a burden on the household budget?
It's sometimes a mixed picture related to economic hardship. On the one hand, it does make it more expensive, or it makes it more difficult for people to make purchases, which may help drive down consumption. But in terms of prevalence, it somewhat paradoxically may slow it down because people are under markedly increased stress, and particularly in the groups that I was discussing, a group people that are at or below the poverty that smoke more, they are under obviously much more stress in the current economic environment. So we think we haven't teased out exactly the effect, but it certainly has not had a dramatic effect on people quitting.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions?
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. I will turn it over to Dr. Frieden and or Dr. McAvee to see if they have any closing remarks.
Well, if Dr. Frieden is not on the line, I would just close by saying that our goal at CEC is to help the tobacco users quit and prevent youth from starting to use tobacco. We know that we have the tools at our disposal that could virtually eliminate the harm caused by tobacco in a really relatively rapid period, and that we remain committed to promoting changes in the social norms around tobacco use, including the use of national campaigns to prevent and reduce tobacco use and to make tobacco products less accessible, affordable, attractive, and accepted. We are looking forward to continuing to collaborate with our colleagues at the Food and Drug Administration that have taken a number of very critical steps over the past 2 years, and will be, for instance, in the next year, instituting the new, much more graphic, effective warning labels on cigarette packs, and that are looking at other options to help affect the accessibility and attractiveness of tobacco products, especially cigarettes. And we look forward to also collaborating with our colleagues at the National Institute of Health to increase the evidence base for treatment options that are effective at helping people quit. We've got to continue to support increases in the price of tobacco products, restricted tobacco advertising and marketing directed to youth, and work for comprehensive smoke-free laws to protect all the non-smokers across the nation from secondhand smoke. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for today's telebriefing, and that will conclude the telebriefing. Thank you.
This is Dr. Frieden. Before you conclude, I just want to reiterate the key points that we've talked about. This is good news that tobacco use has gone down. There are 3 million fewer smokers in America than there were 5 years ago. People who are continuing to smoke are smoking less, but we can do much better by continuing to invest in tobacco control programs at all levels. And the states that have done that have seen very substantial decreases in tobacco use, not only saving millions of lives, but also preventing literally billions of dollars in healthcare costs. And we know how important both of those things are these days, not only helping people live longer and healthier lives, but also driving down the Medicare and Medicaid costs that are so challenging for all of our budgets. Tobacco control is a best buy, and we're encouraged by the results today, and that should emphasize the need to continue and intensify our results, our efforts to help smokers quit, as most smokers want to do. So I want to thank you all very much for your interest, and I look forward to continuing to discuss emerging issues with you in this and other formats. Thank you.